Tasman vidasenayam devatajan namaputro bhavat. Sorry. Tasmat. From Sumati. Vidasenayam. In the womb of his wife. Name Vidasena. Devatajit Nama. Name Devatajit. Putraha. A son. Abhavat. Was born. Translation. From Sumati, a son named Devatajit was born by the womb of his wife named Vidhasena. So you can repeat. From Sumati, a son named Devatajit was born by the womb of his wife named Vidhasena. So there's no purport to this text, nor is there much to talk about here. So we'll read text 3. Atasuryam tattanayo devadyunastato denu matyayam sutaha parameshti tasya suvarchalayam patiha upajataha. Thereafter, in the womb of Asuri, the wife of Devatajit, a son named Devadyunya was begotten. Devadyunya begot in the womb of his wife Denumati, a son named Parameshti. Parameshti begot a son named Patiha in the womb of his wife Suvarchala. So there's no purport to this text, so read the next text. Text 4. Ya atma vidyam akhyaya svayam samshuna mahapurusham anusasmara. King Patiha personally propagated the principles of self-realization. In this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu, and directly realized him. So purport by his divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. The word anusasmara is very significant. God consciousness is not imaginary or concocted. The devotee who is pure and advanced realizes God as he is. Maharaj Patiha did so, and due to his direct realization of Lord Vishnu, he propagated self-realization and became a preacher. A real preacher cannot be bogus. He must first of all realize Lord Vishnu as he is, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 34. Upadekshanti te jnanam yaninas tatva darshanaha. One who has seen the truth can impart knowledge. The word tatva darshi refers to one who has perfectly realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person can become a guru and propound Vaishnava philosophy all over the world. The paragon of bona fide preachers and guru is King Pratiha. So, Omagana Timirandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshura Meditam Yenatas Mai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's several interesting points in this verse. If we notice Prabhupada's translation here, that it indicates that King Pratiha, of course he was a king, first of all, but it also indicates that King Pratiha became a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, of course, we're aware that there are Nityasiddha devotees, and there are Sadhanasiddha devotees. Also, there's another thing called Kripa Siddha devotees. Kripa Siddha means you get some special mercy, and it's described in the Nectar Devotion by the glance or the words of a pure devotee, like Narada Muni. Then one can actually become completely purified, just like this. Of course, that's not generally the procedure. Prabhupada compared that procedure of becoming a Kripa Siddhi or perfectly realized by the mercy, as to, he compared it with one getting an honorary degree in the university. I mean, sometimes you can do that if you happen to be a very prominent personality, but it's extremely rare. I mean, if you're president of the United States, they give you honorary degrees in different universities, or if you've done something simply amazing, they give you honorary degrees, but I've not met anybody who's gotten an honorary degree in a university. So generally, someone has to go through the process. The process means at least spending several years writing a thesis, and then passing a test, being examined. I mean, it's a very difficult procedure. So anyway, so as far as Kripa Siddhi, we should forget about it. We should work hard and engage in the process of sadhana. So there's sadhana. Sadhana, of course, means practice. And so when one engages in the process of sadhana, there's two aspects of sadhana. As we mentioned before, there's the Vaidhi sadhana, where one is practicing, concentrating on the rules and regulations. I have to do this. I have to wake up early. I have to chant my rounds every day. I have to eat prasadam. I have to worship the deities. I have to offer obeisances at a particular time, etc. This is called Vaidhi. And so then when one does Vaidhi very nicely, of course, when you talk about you have to do this, it means that you're choosing to do it. I don't want to really phrase it in such a way that it appears like one is forced to do sadhana. One is not forced to do sadhana. One always has a choice to be in maya. So one should rather phrase it, I am choosing to follow the rules, because I have as a goal to become Krishna conscious or to get out of the material world. As Krishna says in the Gita, four types of people approach him. Chaturvidha bhajanti mam. People come to Krishna because they want wealth. People come to Krishna because they are inquisitive. People come to Krishna because they want knowledge. And people come to Krishna because they're very much in distress. So anyway, for whatever reason, one chooses to perform sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana, in order to achieve one of those goals or achieve ultimately pure devotional service. Of course, in the beginning, we don't really have as our ultimate objective pure devotional service. It's mixed with all sorts of different things. Like you see with Dhruva Maharaj, his goal was not only mixed, he didn't even want pure devotional service in the beginning. He simply wanted to have a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. I mean, he wanted something really fantastic. You could even call it not even just karma mishra bhakti. It was just for karma, just for something material. And of course, he became purified. But whatever it is, one has some objective. Otherwise, one won't be steady in the Vaidhi process unless you actually have some long-term objective. If you don't have a long-term objective, then you're simply in the mode of ignorance. You're a shudra. A shudra is just concerned with basically be here now, the pleasure or the pains that he is experiencing, he or she is experiencing at the present moment. But at least one should be in the mode of passion, if not in the mode of goodness. You know, in the mode of, like Dhruva Maharaj is in the mode of passion. But someone in the mode of ignorance, it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious. Very, very difficult to be determined. There is no determination. Bhagavad Gita describes determination in the mode of ignorance. It doesn't go beyond dreaming, procrastination. Procrastination means putting off for tomorrow what I can do today. And dreaming, yes, I will be just a great devotee someday. One day I'll give up watching all this TV. One day I'll give up eating all this boga. One day I will give up bad association. One day it will happen. That's the mode of ignorance. So at least one should have a little bit of passion in him. You know, goal orientation. So anyway, so Dhruva Maharaj had that mode of passion. So for whatever reason, one chooses to perform Vaidhi. And then by performing the Vaidhi sadhana, in the association of a pure devotee, one can further advance. If one performs Vaidhi Sadhana without the direction of a pure devotee, you're not going to go beyond that. It's just going to be rules and regulations, you know, nimagraha. But when you have the association of a pure devotee, then it can transform into the Raghunuga Sadhana. Because you're getting some bhakti there. It's not simply the rules and regulations that get you to a higher stage. It's the association with the pure devotee that gets you to a higher stage, because he gives you the instructions. Of course, if you don't follow the rules and regulations, you're not associating with the pure devotee, because the pure devotee is manifest through words, through sound vibration. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Akya. The words emanating from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master. So that's actually how we associate with the pure devotee, not simply by being in the physical presence. So by following the directions, the sadhana process given, and actually every pure devotee adjusts the sadhana according to time, place, and circumstance, like Prabhupada did. He adjusted the sadhana from 64 rounds to 16 rounds. And he adjusted all sorts of things like deity worship and all sorts of practices. I mean, like Prabhupada really didn't force us to fast completely on Ekadasi or stay up all night on Ekadasi, which injunctions, you'll find injunctions to that effect in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. But Prabhupada really adjusted things for us, knowing the essential items of devotional service and adjusting some, not principles, but adjusting some details. Anyway, so then one comes to the platform of Raghunuga, which means spontaneous devotional service, but not so spontaneous that one neglects the rules and regulations, but spontaneous in the sense that one follows the rules and regulations spontaneously. You know, one automatically gets up early in the morning. And one doesn't need someone to shake him up in the morning. It's like when we first joined the Krishna Conscious Movement. The business of the temple commander was to wake everybody up in the morning. And it was a very difficult job. I don't know if any of you remember that. You know, I was a temple commander for a while until I made so many enemies they didn't want me to be temple commander anymore. Because we would take the devotees. Sometimes I was a little rough. I would take the devotees and play cartels by their ears or drag them into the shower, and they still didn't get up. And that's pretty amazing. People sleeping in the shower. So anyway, Raghunuga, basically that's part of Raghunuga, but actually another part of Raghunuga is that one begins to be attracted to a particular service in the spiritual world, in fact a particular devotee. A devotee who is called a ragatmaka devotee, a devotee whose atma is raga, you know, attachment, extreme attachment to Krishna. Raga means like attachment. Of course, we also have some extreme attachment in this material world, but that's to other things. So there's a ragatmaka devotee, and the raghunuga devotees follow the ragatmaka devotees. You know, they serve in their internal life, not externally, not that they tell everybody about it. They serve in their internal life, one eternal resident in Vrindavan. Just like I was just reading in the Jiva Dharma, there are two devotees, Brajanath and Vijaya Kumar. They were actually related. Vijaya Kumar was the uncle, and Brajanath, he was the nephew. And they were with this guru, and the guru, Premadas Babaji. And the guru, they approached them and they asked, what about Raghunuga Bhakti? And the guru explained what Raghunuga Bhakti was. And one of them said, I'm very much attracted to serving Krishna in the conjugal way, and I'm very much attracted to serving under, let's say, Lalita. I forget, it was either Lalita or Vishaka or something like that. And the guru said, yes, that's your service. And then he gave the devotee that service to do internally. And then the other devotee, Vijay Kumar, was it the opposite? Anyway, one of them, I forget which one, but one of them was attracted to the conjugal ras, and the other one was attracted to the sakya ras, the coward boy. So he gave that particular devotee that particular relationship and explained what his service was in the spiritual world. So that's Raghunuga Bhakti. And then, it's interesting, after that, those two devotees began to inquire about Bhava Bhakti. So Bhava Bhakti is actually above Raghunuga Bhakti. So Bhava Bhakti, of course, means when you begin to experience these bhavas, beginning with the V-bhava, which is the stimulant for the other bhavas, and I'm not going to get into what it is because I don't have that much time for class. There's V-bhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Stai Bhava, and ultimately Vyabhachari Bhava. So the V-bhava is the stimulant for the other types of bhavas or emotions. And so then that's explained. It's interesting, in the Jiva Dharma, all the principles in the nectar of devotion, that is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, by Srila Rupa Goswami are expounded on in a story format. So it's a way, actually reading the Jiva Dharma is a way of understanding the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's like Bhakti Vinod Thakur's elaboration on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in a story format. Really interesting. So I advise your devotees to read it. So in any case, so then there's Raghunuga and Bhava Bhakti, and ultimately there's Prema Bhakti. So here we find King Pratiha, who did work his way up to become an absolutely great devotee, pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. There's no indication in this verse that he was an Ichchasiddha devotee, such as his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. There's every indication that he said, in this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu. That means he became. Prabhupada didn't become, he was. You understand the difference? So that's an Ichchasiddha devotee. So, but also it says here, let's go back to the first sentence. King Pratiha personally propagated the principles of self-realization. In this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great... What does that tell you? That tells you by preaching Krishna consciousness, he actually became a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. And he followed, in this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Person. In other words, he followed the Vaidhi process, sadhana process. I'm just getting the implication from this particular verse, and then preached Krishna consciousness, became a great devotee, and Prabhupada said here that such a person, in the end of the purport, can become a guru and propound Vaishnava philosophy all over the world. So here's someone who became, and he was a king too, to boot. He wasn't in the Brahmin caste. So what does it mean for us? Of course, we do have these instructions given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Marigaya Guru Hoy Tore Desh, that he basically wanted everyone to become guru and preach across the land, Tore Desh. And this instruction was given in South India to different people who wanted to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and leave their home. Actually, they were so inspired by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they just wanted to give up everything. Like there was one devotee, his Karma Brahmana, and others in South India. And Lord Chaitanya basically told them, first he told them, Stani Stitashu Dikatam Tanvan Manobhir, reciting a verse that's spoken by Lord Brahma. Just stay where you are. Shrutikatam. You should hear Tanvan Manobhir and chant and engage in the process of Krishna consciousness, and then Yari Dagatari Kara Krishna Padesha Marigai Guru Hoy Tori Desh. Then you become guru. So actually this is a very important principle to understand, that the method for becoming Krishna conscious, of course, is elaborated here. You follow sadhana bhakti and vaidhi bhakti, raghunuga bhakti, whatever, and then you preach, and then you bring others to Krishna consciousness. You become guru. So what does this mean to become guru? Of course, we understand there's different types of gurus. There's Vartma Pradashika guru, There's Siksha Guru, there's Diksha Guru, these are certain times there's Sannyasi Guru. There's all these different gurus. And even in the Bhagavatam, you have this Avaduta Brahmana accepting different aspects of the material creation as guru. Even a prostitute is a guru. So what does it mean? I mean, of course, the word guru probably translates as heavy or heavy with knowledge. But it also could mean something or someone we learn from. Like this Avaduta Brahman in the Bhagavatam, he was learning from a pigeon about attachment to the material world. So he accepted even something that happened. And obviously the pigeon, he didn't offer obeisances to the pigeon. You know, kapota, kapoti, that's the name for a pigeon. He didn't offer obeisances to the pigeon and say, you know, she, pigeon, Sharana Padma, Kevala Bhakati Sadma. But still he took different things that happened to him as lessons. This is another very important point, that things will happen to us in this world, especially there'll be great difficulties. And I'm not just like cursing everybody by saying that. But life means that there are going to be great difficulties. There's learning experiences. You know, you learn from different things. Just like there was this one movie that I saw that said that it actually showed that people become happy when there's some distress. Because they learn from those things. And of course, they may not learn to be Krishna conscious, but they may learn to conquer over that particular difficulty. And they acquire different skills. And of course, their self-esteem becomes increased. But in Krishna consciousness, it's like that. You know, when there's difficulty, you take it as a learning experience. So that those difficulties, or even whatever we perceive in this world, we can learn from. Which is very, very interesting. And even we can see other people in Maya, we can learn from them. That can be one of our gurus. You know, just like I heard yesterday, some devotee was just like completely in Maya, admiring the sunrise and sunset. And I was just thinking, you know, do I become attracted to these things? You know, I was just examining these things. And that was like a teaching experience or a learning experience for me. So but then as far as people who are gurus, there's Vartma Pradashika Guru, the guru who shows you the path. And that, of course, the typical example of that is Dhruva Maharaja's mother, Suniti, who actually told him when he was looking for Lord Vishnu, she said, well, Lord Vishnu's in the forest. And that's where you can find him. So that was like, and she also said, if you want, and even Suruchi, who told Dhruva Maharaj that if you want to sit on your father's lap, you have to take birth as my son, and in order to do that, you have to worship Lord Vishnu. So even so, that's like a Vartma Pradarshika guru, isn't it? Even when she was envious, she was giving him good instructions, which is interesting. So then apart from that, so the Vartma Pradarshika guru doesn't have to be a pure devotee or be following purely. I mean, even in one sense, I can say that George Harrison was my Vartma Pradarshika guru, because I heard Hare Krishna from him, you know, my sweet Lord. And so, you know, he sort of helped show me the path. But I don't worship him. I don't have a picture of him on my altar. I do like some of his songs. But then as a Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru, that's a very interesting topic. Actually, Prabhupada said one should not distinguish between Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru. Both actually should be qualified in Krishna consciousness. Diksha Guru generally is understood as the representative of the Sambandha Gyan and Siksha Guru, Abhideya, like that. Abhideya Sambandha means the knowledge of one's relationship with Krishna, Krishna's relationship with the material world, and one's knowledge of one's relationship with the material world. That's Sambandha Gyan. And then Abhideya is what to do about it. You know, the sadhana process, like that. So Prabhupada basically wanted all of his disciples, and probably all members of the Krishna conscious movement, ultimately not only disciples become gurus, but Prabhupada wanted everyone to become a guru, ultimately, as they matured in Krishna consciousness. So that means to become guru, you have to preach Krishna consciousness and perform sadhana practically or properly. You know, just like King Pratiha, which I was mentioning before, you know, he followed the rules and regulations. And he propagated, because we understand to propagate the principles, you have to set a good example. That's another thing. So you can, he said he personally propagated the principles of self-realization. That means he followed and he preached them. Because to propagate, you can't propagate if you just follow and you don't preach, and you can't propagate if you don't follow and you preach. So both things have to be there. That's called acharya. So therefore, Prabhupada wanted his disciples all to follow and to preach Krishna consciousness. That means book distribution or some other process of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. And they wanted to become gurus. It's not that, because, as Prabhupada called this, the naked mother philosophy, because your mother was naked when she was young, that she should always remain naked. So it's not that just because, you know, we joined the movement, and before we joined the movement, we were doing all sorts of abominable things, and we don't want to even want to list them, that will always remain abominable. Proof of Srila Prabhupada's potency is that people who were abominable before doing abominable things, people never are abominable, they can become purified and they can become gurus. And there's many, many examples of that in Vaishnava history, of people in different classes and whatever becoming gurus. Even you have Muslims, of course, Haridas Thakur, we understand he's an interested in devotee, but still the example was, he was born in a Muslim family, was certainly not a vegetarian family, and he became Krishna conscious, or manifested Krishna consciousness as a pastime. So, in any case, devotees, we can achieve a status of being gurus. It's not like, yesterday I received, or read this magazine, you know, Back to Prabhupada, where They state that only Prabhupada can be the guru. And everybody else, you know, we're all fallen, just remain fallen. And we're all fallen, and all we can do is have Prabhupada initiate everybody. I mean, that's one extreme. Actually, in ISKCON, there's another extreme too. The other extreme is let everybody be a guru. Which is, you know, there's some discussion about that going on the internet right now. Even on the GBC conference, that several people say the GBC should not restrict, you know, anybody who's been in the movement a certain amount of time, and knows a few verses from the Bhagavad Gita, whatever, and knows the philosophy, he should be allowed, he can be guru. No sort of supervision, no sort of vetting, you know, vetting someone, it's just like that. So that's one extreme is, the Ritvik people say no one can become a guru. And the other extreme is that everybody should be guru. And they even cite Prabhupada that he wanted all of his disciples and everybody to be guru. But Prabhupada also wanted the GBC to manage the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You know, sometimes they say, well, Prabhupada never said the GBC should regulate gurus. But actually regulating, you know, who could take up the service, because being a guru is a service, it's not an eternal position. But regulating different people's services is certainly an important aspect of the management of the Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, basically the government has to protect people. Like, I mean, for example, in America, everybody has the opportunity, you know, if they're honest, to become a police person. Notice I didn't say policeman. Everyone has an opportunity to become, you know, a member of the police force. But it's not that I just put on a uniform and I start stopping you for speeding. As much as I'd like to do that and make some money. You know, I can buy a radar machine, you know, and stop people, but I have to be approved by the government. It's obvious. I mean, this is no-brainer. I mean, everybody has the opportunity. You know, if I go to school, it's a little too late for that now, but if I go to school and study, you know, whatever, people have to study, and then I exercise, learn how to do enough push-ups, learn how to shoot a gun, which I already know. And I can apply to become a policeman if I was younger. I mean, that's my right. That's true. But if I don't follow the process, and even if I do follow the process, they still have to vet me. Isn't it? You know, even if I graduate from police academy with A's, and I know all the procedures and everything like that, still they may not hire me. Still they may say, you know, you have enough people on the police force, or you're not strong enough. Anyway, you're not coordinated enough. You know, that can happen too. Just like when I was in school, I wanted to play baseball with the other boys, but I wasn't coordinated enough. So they can say so many things. Or you have this defect, you know, the bodily defect. Whatever it is, you know, you're lame or you're whatever it is. So they can coordinate and decide who can become a member of the police force. But it's everyone's right to try. And in the same way, the GBC, you know, as managing the International Society for Christian Conscience, because Prabhupada did say the GBC is the ultimate authority or management authority in the Christian Conscience movement, does have not only the right, but the duty to make sure that devotees aren't put in a position where they can be cheated. I mean, even in the past, we've seen people in the position of guru, and actually these people weren't vetted by the GBC, who had all the qualifications at that particular time. Not only did they have the qualifications, I mean, new Shastra, they were actually traveling with Prabhupada, but they certainly weren't qualified to be guru. Or they became disqualified after some time. So not only does the GBC have the right or duty to vet who becomes guru, but they have also the duty to supervise those who are gurus. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So we don't want to accept either extreme, that first of all there's no gurus, because that would be like saying like Prabhupada didn't have the ability to impart Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness to people. And on the other hand, we don't want to say that, you know, everybody who knows the philosophy or everybody is guru. So it's a fine point, or not even a fine point. It's an easy point to understand. So anyway, so we can get from this verse that we should follow strictly, preach Krishna consciousness, and we should aspire to become at least Siksha gurus and guide people in Krishna consciousness. Siksha guru doesn't mean someone just giving a class, but someone who can give practical guidance on the different levels of Krishna consciousness. Doesn't mean just Vaidhi, it means Raganuga and Bhava and ultimately Prema. That's what guru means. When a disciple is on a particular level, you could guide them in that level. And you can guide them and tell them about the next level and the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. So anyway, this is guru. So any questions or comments? We have, yeah.
The first line of the
purport, Prabhupada says
a word.
Anusas Mara. Prabhupada translates this anusasmara, perfectly understood and always remembered. In other words, this devotee, King Pratiha, perfectly understood, that's jnana, and always remembered as vijnana. Perfectly understood. And always remember. In other words, to always remember means to always be engaged in Krishna service. So 24 hours a day. So in other words, that's jnana, vijnana, knowledge and realization. And also teaching and acting. The same two points I was making, like acharya. Actually there's two words, achar and prachar. Achar means action or examples, just like Krishna says, yadad acharati shrestas tatade vetaro janaha, as leaders act and everyone follows. And then prachar means the speaking, how one speaks. So there's prachar and achar. Of course, in, I think it's Hindi, achar means some sort of like, thing to eat, right? It means like, mango pickles or something. You know, it's actually funny. Want some achar on your food? Did you take a mango pickle? Anyway, yeah, so that's very interesting. It's very interesting, this verse here, how Prabhupada said he became a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is very inspiring for us, isn't it? We can become great devotees. And we should aspire to become gurus. There's nothing wrong with that. Not so we can just like go around and have our feet bathed. I mean, just like I was with a group of young kids. I was teaching a class to young kids the other day in Milwaukee. And I asked them, what is a sannyasi? You know, what's the definition of sannyasi? You know, I wanted to hear something like someone who travels and preaches. But one young girl, she was about 4 or 5 years old, she said the sannyasi, the definition of sannyasi is one who gets his feet bathed in every house. I mean, it was cute. It was cute as a dickens, you know, hearing her say that. But you see how people can misinterpret, you know, what a sannyasi, just looking externally what a sannyasi is. Just someone who's basically having a pedicure everywhere he goes. So any other questions or comments?
I mean, here in your class, on the two extremes of the guru thing, I don't really see it as one extreme as, you know, the vetting process, having to vet people.
Yeah, that's not an extreme.
Well, you've used it that anybody can be guru, but, I mean, people can be guru, anybody can be guru. But I think that when you have the vetting process, you restrict preaching. Because you restrict who can be recognized as a preacher.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, because the GBC has never been successful at limiting who could, as a guru, who's going to fall down in the future. You almost can't determine who's going to be successful, who's not going to be successful. Because there's many people that have been vetted who have had issues and fallen down. But at the same time, you restrict who could potentially be successful. And that's what we're lacking in this movement, those who are successful. We need successes.
Well, let me give you a little history. Since the GBC actually started with the formal vetting process with sannyasis and gurus, we haven't had any of the people who are formally vetted fall down. I mean, that's
the past.
No. The GBC just started doing the formal vetting process approximately 10 years ago with the sannyasis and gurus. And actually, it's become more sophisticated recently. I spoke to Palanananda Maharaj about this. And the ones who became gurus right after Prabhupada were not formally vetted. I was not formally vetted. And basically, most of the people who were not formally vetted did have difficulties. Since the GBC has started that process. Otherwise, people get confused. I agree with you, it shouldn't be such a heavy process. Like, I'll just tell you what I feel. Like, Palanananda Maharaj makes it too heavy a process. He's in charge of who can become a guru and who can become a sannyasi. And basically, if I was applying now, I would run away. Because it's so heavy and so much bureaucracy. So I agree with you in that respect. But there has to be some sort of vetting process to protect the devotees. Because the problem was before we didn't actually have a proper vetting process.